saw Janine. She looked just like a royal queen. And she cruised by with a wealthy guy in her Cadillac limousine last time. That's when I saw Janine.
Today's date again, April 16th, 2008. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to have you here with me again for this most important of broadcasts. Slowed down a little bit, as I've said in the last file, with these broadcasts because, well, a lot of reasons. One of them is financial with my phone calling and the rest of it. I've stopped making big investments in phone calls and stuff because it's just too much for me and my family. And all you people that have helped me, I want to thank you up front here for helping me keep this on air and keep this going. We're not swimming in the funds over here in at the French Connection. Never have been. But know this, whatever does come in, I try to plow back into this programming and keep you abreast of what's happening in the world. Today's date, of course, things are starting to get reported. This is profit or loss reporting period for corporations in America. And I want to bring forward the idea that one of the big criminals in this whole mess, J.P. Morgan, had just come out today and exceeded expectations. Now, this is amazing. This is like me having my neighbor's kid paint me a picture, ladies and gentlemen. And when he brings it over to me, I say, "Ooh, what a nice painting, little Joey. How much is that worth?" And he says, $5 million. And I say, "Oh, very nice." And I go into the house and I pin it to my refrigerator. And then when I file my taxes, I write down that I have a painting in my house worth $5 million. And I, of course, I report that my I'm wealthy, and then look, I got a $5 million asset here in my class. It's exactly what J.P. Morgan has done on the financial side, ladies and gentlemen. They've taken worthless pieces of paper that they've acquired through their shenanigans and in their criminal acts with the Fed, and then put them on their balance sheet as assets that are valuable and viable. And in fact, no one in their right mind at gunpoint would buy them. And yet they're claiming them as value and as of assets. And now they're claiming a profitable period here, higher than expected. Boy, it just gets worse. And nobody's checking these guys out. Nobody's making the calls on them. And they're allowing this stuff to go forward. Other thing that I found out today, which doesn't surprise me, back in the summertime when the subprime market was starting to show signs of problems, it was already shorted. And all of you out there that know anything about finances know about what a short is. The shorts were already in place by Goldman Sachs, the only company in the world that actually made money on the implosion of the subprime marketplace. Isn't that interesting? Especially since that they are a major representative in America of the Rothschild Bank fortune. Now, I mean, there's other people involved in Goldman Sachs, of course, than just Rothschild, but their principals in that organization. It is really their main investment arm into the United States, and it is the conduit by which they do most of their business. So, in order to bring more light to some of these subjects and some of the things that are actually going on today, I want to bring on my resident expert here, Mohammed Rafiq. Mohammed, are you with me?
I am indeed. Good evening, Darrell.
Well, what do you think, Mohammed? Good evening to you. What do you think of this J.P. Morgan actually coming out and claiming to have profits in excess of what everybody expected after what they just went through with buying the junk and the crud and the malarkey from? Oh my goodness! It's fraud on a scale I've never seen in my life.
It is a tremendous fraud, obviously, Darrell. I mean, anybody looking at the numbers, knowing that they are the largest single company in the United States in respect of derivative exposure, $93 trillion, as the listeners are aware out there.
$93 trillion.
And, of course, a lot of those are credit derivatives, and we'll touch on credit derivatives in a little bit. But in terms of their annual reporting, because the Fed did the magical Aladdin trick of swapping new lamps for old, they're in the rather helpful position of being able to say that they've got all, with these repo trades, these rolling monthly repo trades, Darrell, all the stuff which is illiquid and probably insolvent And the thing for everybody to remember here, why are they not bankrupt? We were just discussing this, Darryl.
Yeah.
The difference between somebody being insolvent and somebody being bankrupt is only a legal writ.
That's right.
Because at the time somebody's insolvent, well, nobody's actually forced them. They're not officially declared into bankruptcy, and they're not legally stopped from trading. That will only occur if somebody puts them in court demanding their money back in a legal framework, and then they are found unable to repay in a court. Then they will become bankrupt. So we have a situation where banks which are insolvent are being allowed to trade on by the central banks, and not only allowed to trade on, but actually given a lift up, a bit of help. The Fed, of course, has swapped, taken on repo a lot of these bonds which are worthless, bits of paper, as you've quite rightly pointed out, Darryl, and given them nice, shiny US Treasury bills in exchange. So, of course, they've done far better than expected. I would say that the statement is entirely true, because nobody would expect the Fed to do this with taxpayers' money. That is not how we would expect a central bank to behave. It's extremely irresponsible behavior. If a company is not able to cut the mustard, if it's not able to keep afloat of its own volition, the law of capitalism and capital markets is survival of the fittest. If you can't stand the heat, you get out the kitchen. If you don't make the grade, you're out.
Yeah, but see, this is their contention is that this particular company is too big to fail, because the effect on other companies, and you know the contagion effect already. Just by looking at one small example of a company, one-tenth its size, Northern Rock, has the potential of cascading the whole system, which, in fact, the whole system by rights, by all intents and purposes right now, is insolvent, completely insolvent, and yet they've smoke and mirrors and bubblegum have stuck this thing together. And it's only a matter of time before people wise up to the fact that this is a completely failed equation. It cannot be sussed out with the figures and the money and the situation that they're presenting today. It can't be, Mohammed.
No, and it doesn't add up. And as I say, Darryl, the thing is that although the Fed has been able to undertake this mischief with taxpayers' money in America, when, you know, we see high street companies being enforced to live under the free market principles of if you don't make the grade, if you can't get the mustard, then you're going to go under. You were explaining to me, Darryl, and it's coming out on the mainstream media, that a large number of ordinary household corporations, they're just being left to fall by the wayside. They're dropping like flies.
That's right. That's right. And
so if we have a rule that says you may be the biggest furniture company in the United States, but you're insolvent, and some of your creditors have now taken you to court, and you've become bankrupt. And that's, we're sorry, everybody who's now out of a job. We're sorry, everybody whose livelihood's gone. We're sorry for maybe whole towns dependent on them as an employer from production or assembly purposes. We're sorry, but that's the way it works.
That's right.
That's what we're told, Darryl.
Well, and what I told you earlier today about these credit default swaps guaranteeing the line of credit that they were using to stay afloat, and now of course the spigot has been shut down. And now what we've got is another problem here, though, Mohammed. Those credit default swaps, the downgrading of them, and the number and the amount that's been downgraded by virtue of the insurance having failed, is astronomical when you do the math.
It's tremendous. You know, when we were explaining to people last year that the derivatives market is worth $650 billion, and there are different types of derivatives.
One of them that we made
people last December, Dal, was the credit derivative.
Yeah.
And just to clarify what that is, this are worth $62 trillion, 10% of the whole derivative market. What a credit derivative is, it's basically an option. It's an option that gives me the right. If I sold you a credit derivative, if we entered into a credit derivative contract between us, Darrell, you've got some bonds, maybe, I don't know, Fannie Mae, or some kind of bond that you might have concerns about being downgraded.
Mm.
So you come to me, I'm Mr. J.P. Morgan, and you say, hey, I'm concerned that these bonds will be downgraded, and that, you know, if I go to market to sell them, I might lose money at that time. And I say to you, well, I don't believe that's the case. I think you're worrying unnecessarily, Darrell. And you say, well, okay, put your money where your mouth is. And I say, how? I say, well, I'll pay a premium to you. This is what you're saying to me now. You'll pay me a premium on the understanding that if this bond has a credit event, this is what they're known as, the language, a credit event, so downgrading from AAA, or maybe there's a default on a coupon payment, or maybe the company goes insolvent. It could be a range of events. These are all listed in the contract. A credit event occurs, I will pay out you the sum of money that you will lose as a result of that event.
That's right.
So it's an option which kicks in only at the time a credit event occurs. That's the trigger. And then you have the option to call on me for that money.
That's right.
And depending on the nature of the credit event, it will pay out a different type of funding. So obviously if something goes from AAA to AA, in the markets, as we've explained to the listeners, a AAA institution pays 10 basis points over the base rate, and a AA pays 40, an extra 30 basis points, I believe it is. So what would happen in a credit event of a downgrade from a AAA to a AA, you would come to me and say, hey buddy, you now owe me 30 basis points on the amount of nominal that we've hedged here. Now the interesting thing is that although the entire bond market is only worth $45 trillion, there is ISDA, the International Swaps and Derivatives Association, have come out and told us that $62 trillion of insurance has been sold. What that means is the likes are that we were just that you just mentioned, Al, of people betting on subprime. Some institutions took bets that the subprime were going to fall, and they used credit derivatives. And here, they weren't even holding a bond that was being insured. They just believed a credit event was going to occur. So they paid a premium, believing that this collapse was going to occur.
Right.
And of course, that's how they made their money, through these products. And a lot of people are in the market, and what ISDA said, the International Swaps and Derivatives Association, they said in the second half of 2007, there were record sales, and the sales were up from $45 trillion the previous year to $62. There were an extra $17 trillion of insurance. Now, we as J.P. Morgan, we could have sold those $17 trillion worth of insurance. And we could sell that insurance to 10 lots of people who are not even bond holders, but they all want to bet on the bond collapsing. And we're sat here as J.P. Morgan saying, as if Fannie Mae would ever collapse. That's a ridiculous proposition. As if Bear Stearns bonds would collapse. That's a ridiculous proposition. As if Wachovia bonds would collapse. That's a ridiculous proposition. We'll sell that all day long to anybody who wants it. So even if there's only $6 billion worth of bonds in the market, they'll sell insurance of $60 billion. because they don't care that it's not being used for bond insurance. They want the premium. They're being greedy and they want paying out. What happens, of course, is this is leverage. If that $6 billion of bonds fail, they have to pay out the failure money to 10 groups of people, i.e. $60 billion. So although the bond collapse itself is only a $6 billion collapse, J.P. Morgan's liability is $60 billion because they've oversold. They've sold it to anyone. You and I, we could go out, all our listeners out there can go out and buy one of these derivative contracts from somebody saying, I think that's going to fail or this is going to fail, I want to insure against it. We're not going to ask you if we're holding the bond or not. We don't care. We just want you to pay us the premium because we believe it's a good bet. J.P. Morgan have got $93 trillion worth of credit derivatives. If just 10% of those are credit derivatives, and I believe they're holding more than that, but if just 10%, that means they've got $9 trillion worth of bonds insured out there in the markets. As these bonds fail, they have to pay out the full amount. Even if people are not holding the bonds, we don't have to be a bond owner. We just took the bet on that it would collapse, and you have to pay us the amount.
Yeah, but see, now what you've got to understand if, as the listener here, is that the companies outside of the brokerages and trading houses themselves that underwrote some of this are insurance underwriters themselves, such as AMBEC and MBIA, which we've gone into deep discussions about on this programming. The fact of the matter is that both of those two underwriters are insolvent. They don't have anywhere near the money in their accounts to fulfill any of the obligations they've made. So basically, what's happened was they're getting rollovers. What a rollover in my parlance right now means is that they're taking present payment contracts that are due and rolling them over to a future date, which all it takes to upstage that is somebody to say, hey, I want out when my contract date ended, and my contract date ends now, and this thing is bad, and you owe me. Now, Jim Sinclair said on his site is that the true implosion of this mess will come in the courtroom. He said, because they can do sleight of hand all they want, and they can roll something over on somebody, or they can tell them we'll pay you next week, or the check's in the mail, but it's not until a court of law takes a look at the contract itself and adjudicates it that these people have no choice but to pay out, and they can't. They can't.
That's right, Darrell. I mean, what's actually happening now is that J.P. Morgan obviously has very large obligations. Maybe if just 10% of their credit derivative bet has actually got to be fully paid out, just 10% of that $9 trillion, and we've been conservative there, we've just used the standard 10% for the total number of derivatives in play, so we've given them 10% of their derivative portfolio, $93 trillion, but they are known in the industry as the credit derivative organization, and that's why I say I believe they've got more than that, Darrell. But let's just say that they have $9 trillion worth of credit derivatives insurance out there. And let's say only 10% of that needs paying out. So they've now got people knocking on the door saying, we want paying out. That's $900 billion.
That's right.
What's happened is that the Fed has had to go round to all those contracting parties and say, listen, they owe you the money. Don't worry about it now. Don't put them in court. Let's not have a run. If you put them in court, you won't get paid out, and there'll be a run, and there'll be all kinds of nervousness. So just wait until everything's restructured and sorted out and working properly, and then slowly we'll put a mechanism in place whereby you'll get paid out. So all these deals have been done behind closed doors. Sadly, for the largest furniture company in the United States, the Fed didn't step in and say to the creditors, hey, listen, guys, you know, they'll pick up again in another couple of years' time when the furniture market's recorrected and you know, don't take them to court, just give them a couple of years. No, nothing like that's occurred. And when we say, Darrell, well, you know, an excuse has been made in that, look at the contagion, look at the problems, they can't force them for this reason or that reason. Hey, this is if you can't take the heat, stay out the kitchen. If you can't afford to pay out your debts and your obligations, you should not be taking them on in the first place. This bank, like all the other banks, should never have been allowed to take a position that if things went bad, they could never afford to pay. And not only can they never afford to pay, but the Fed can't bail them out. The Fed does not have $900 billion to pay JP Morgan's clients off. All that the Fed has done, Darrell, and we've told the listeners this, it's very important. All the Fed's done is keep them solvent by giving them enough cash to balance the solvency ratios. But they have not paid out the counterparties that they owe money to. Nobody is making good that at the moment. It's a Mexican standoff. Everybody's saying, hey, don't you ask of us, because if you ask from us, we have to ask them, and if they ask them, they'll ask somebody else, and somebody else will have to ask other people, and we'll all be in court, all demanding money off each other. So this is why we're trying to explain to people that the banks are insolvent to the extent, not just in the solvency calculations, but more importantly, in the counterparty calculations, the money they're supposed to be paying out to people. So for a bank that owes $900 billion to turn around and say it's doing better than expected is exactly like the analogy you gave at the beginning, Darrell, with this little picture painted by your next-door neighbour's child. It is a flagrant nonsense.
Well, and now, what's happened now, too, is the rush for the exits is beginning here, and it's, of course, it got set alight by China finally, and I wondered when they were going to. I'm surprised they didn't do it earlier, and I'm surprised that they got stuck with so much in their accounts. In other words, I would have probably, if I were the Chinese, I wouldn't have announced I'm getting out of the dollar. I would have started getting and hiring counterparties all over the globe to try to dump some of it before I made the announcement. But they've had to finally come clean and say, look, the dollar needs to be diversified out of, and we're going to look toward, euro is about the only currency in the world that can absorb any measure of the investment. But they're pretty much in trouble because there's no place to take $1.4 trillion out of the dollar without losing the full value on the other end and without upstaging another currency. You can't take $1.4 trillion and move it into euros. You can't move that into an economy like Japan and put it in yens. It's too large a sum. So we're in a situation now where basically treading water inside of a volcanic dome here, swimming in lava, and we just haven't figured out that we're doomed yet. This is a doomed situation. Doomed. Now, does that mean that we as people who are fighting world criminal Zionism are doomed? No. In fact, I think these are opportunities if we use them correctly, Muhammad. And we've discussed so many files here on how we can put this phase of trouble to our own benefit, to put it to work for us. You know, if we all just put our heads down and kind of go, all right, I'll just start looking for seeds on the ground, instead of fighting this cabal, this criminal gang that has done this to us, yes, we will end up taking it on the chin. We're going to get beat. But what I'm thinking now is that we need to use this as an opportunity. And it is, in my view. Every situation that you face in this life that we live has two ways to be seen. It can be seen as an opportunity for something else or a failure. And I happen to want to see this one as a chance for us. Now, again, what it says is that they lie to us. I mean, we got George Bush on TV saying that the economy's in great shape. I actually had this guy. I want to out this guy's name. His name's Saville on a website that just is a lie factory. It's Kitco. And he's saying that gold's going to drop down to 800 and that the economy's going to recover and the dollar's going to go through the roof. This guy actually has the temerity to put an article like that together and put it out into the mainstream and get these people to print it. What in the heck happened to his brain? And see, the lies are so obvious now that you can pick out the liars very easily. What do you think?
Oh, undoubtedly, Daryl. You know, I mean, previously to spot a liar was a very, very precise science. You know, you really had to be fully au fait with a huge amount of details and look for the sleight of hand and the find the lady and the shifting of the eyes and the body language or whatever mechanism. Now it's just blatant. It's so glaringly obvious. I mean, we look at the head of the World Bank has come out recently and said that, you know, he believes that the banking losses are, you know, in the order of $1 trillion or
which is
more.
A trillion is an understatement.
Well, of course, he's the thing that's good about that, Daryl, although it's the number's obviously wrong, is that he is the first person to in the mainstream media to talk in the order of magnitude, which is correct, which is we're not talking millions or billions, but we're rather trillions. He is the first person to come out and talk in trillions, language that we've been using for over 6 months. When we were discussing this last October, Daryl, we had Bernanke, and I'd like to remind everybody here, too, because when we're on the subject of lies, it's very important. When you and I, Daryl, were saying that the sums involved are just so vast, people are not going to be able to get their heads around it, Bernanke had made a public statement as chairman of the Fed to a U.S. congressional committee, I believe it was, if not a Senate committee, one of the two, saying that the losses so far have been $50 billion, that they're going to go up to about $70 billion, but that the whole situation is contained.
That's right.
Those were his, you know, verbatim, practically word for word, his statement.
And that's what. That's when we were going la-di-da into the month of November. And I remember knowing full well after seeing what had happened in the end of August into September. And interestingly enough, we reported on the French Connection in August and September that an event had happened in the summertime when everybody was off doing their golfing and vacationing that was very significant in the financial markets, and it was showing up in the original problems in the credit markets for housing. And I knew that the bubble had burst. There were some very good pundits out there saying that things had gone wrong. But can you imagine 3 months earlier having the company Goldman Sachs setting up shorts across the board on all of these positions, positioning themselves to make money on the failure that they knew was underway?
And of then course turn- we knew it was underway, and the fact that we knew we had inside information,
yep.
And we revealed that information over the French Connection in October and November of last year, at the time that the powers that be were still denying it. Anybody looking back at any of these statements can see the Pinocchio effect. These people were just lying, and the French Connection was making unequivocally clear what the truth was. We've got Wachovia Bank now, haven't we? Right now, hot off the press, 2 months ago, the CEO of Wachovia Bank, fifth largest bank by deposit size, the largest private mortgage lender in the United States, a big bank, serious player, he said a couple of months ago that he'd just done a rights issue for $3.5 billion, not because Wachovia were in trouble, but simply because, you know, he wanted to get through 2008 comfortably. There's no need to panic. Don't worry, anybody. This is just a bit of extra cash to give us some cushion and a bit of headspace out there. 2 months later, as at yesterday, on the front page of the London Times, we see the same man saying that he needs to do an emergency rights issue for $7 billion of emergency capital.
Yeah, 2.5 times what his first infusion was. So what we're talking now is what Covia has taken onto its books, a $10 billion liability. Now, ladies and gentlemen, billions here. We're talking a company, Wachovia might be fully valued at about 50 or 60 billion, and you're talking about 20 to 25% of this company's value of new debt just to shore up its balance sheet, which means that the company is insolvent, is what it means. All this mumbo jumbo that Muhammad and I talk about every time we do one of these files is just that. If you want to put it down, to boil it down to its essence, is that these people are lying through their teeth. They've completely gone belly up, and the only people that don't know it yet are the people who are still believing in this story they're telling. And I can't imagine that the American public can sit back and let this happen without rising up in some way. We've got to turn this around, Muhammad. We can't allow this story that they tell in the mainstream press to be told the way they've told it without pointing it out, because I think this is one of our opportunities here, and maybe you'll agree.
Well, it is an opportunity. It's a very sad one that we're having to take, but people in the world now who maybe have maligned you and made false statements about you and about the work that you've been doing and on the French Connection, people now can see, hey, this guy, 6 months ahead of the curve, has been telling the truth all the way down the line. The truth that's been told on this particular subject underpins and underlines all the other truth which you've discussed in the other subject matters and the other materials which are all over the French Connection.
Yes, sir.
It's up to people now, because in a sense, this train crash, which you describe quite poetically, Darrell, as a train crash happening in slow motion,
yeah.
This train crash now, we're hitting the barriers, everybody.